And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, DJ. I am good. This is a fantastic part of the year. I know the sports schedule is all wonky because of the way we were reacting to the pandemic last year and it affected. But to be able to see NHL, NBA, baseball, and everything kind of coming together at one time, I think it's been a fascinating study. And so I think it's a great time. If you're a sports fan, I don't know if it gets much better than where we're at right now in the middle of the summer once we see football kickoff.
All right, we got some good things to touch on today. We're going to hit on the N'Keal Harry trade request. Going to go back, which is always a good thing to do, go back in time to when he was coming into the draft. What did we think about him, strengths, weaknesses, and whether or not this could work for him somewhere else. It hasn't necessarily worked there in New England. And then want to talk about the quarterback position and some new contracts that could be on the horizon here, what we think should be the best pathway forward for the teams in that regard, and also some position battles in the AFC. But before we get to all that stuff, you just mentioned we just wrapped up a hockey season. And I know, Buck, you've done a little homework here on how the Tampa Bay Lightning have been built, a team coming off back-to-back NHL Stanley Cup titles here. So what did you learn?
You know, DJ, it's funny, right? Because, look, we love talking about football, but I think we're in the team-building, culture-building, studying process. And I think when you think about the Tampa Bay Lightning, they will go down as one of the best dynasties that we've seen in recent memory. This is a team that has not only won back-to-back Stanley Cup titles, but they've been a dominant team. I want to say they have 70 playoff wins over the last 7 or 8 seasons. They're a team that is enjoying a run that, I mean, we really haven't seen in a long, long time. And so whenever you have that kind of success, I think you try to figure out what is it that they are doing that teams or general managers in our sport can take and move forward to maybe create their own dynasty or have their own successful runs. And so there are 3 things that I stole or that I learned from the Tampa Bay Lightning's run. The first one, patience pays off. When you think about their coach, John Cooper, he's the longest tenured coach in the NHL. He has what they call a points percentage of 6.647. It ranks second all time behind Scottie Bowman. And even though you would think like, well, of course they're going to keep a coach who's been that successful. When you go back and look, DJ, 2015, they lost the Stanley Cup Finals. 2016, 2018, they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals in 7-game series. 2019, they had the best record in the NHL, and they were swept in the first round. And so when you think about the knee-jerk reaction, because we kind of talked about this on the podcast the other day, how more teams need to exhibit patience. This is a team that after that failure in 2019, they could have moved on from the coach and blew up the team because they had a five-year run where they couldn't necessarily get it done. But because they stayed the course, they now are rewarded with back-to-back titles, and they have an opportunity to really be maybe a dominant team for the next 2 or 3 years because he understands how to get it done, and they have a level of consistency and stability within the organization that all of the pieces fit.
Yeah, it brings me back to that conversation I had with Rick Olchek, you know, Eddie Olchek's brother. Rick is an executive in the personnel department for the Seattle Kraken, so the new expansion team up there. But sat next to him on an airplane, and we had a great talk about scouting and the differences between the sports. And he brought up the fact that everything in hockey at this point in time, and this is a few years back, it's 2 things. It's speed and skill. That is it. Like, that's what you're scouting. You know, you used to be able to, it was more physicality and having guys that could bang and do those things and having kind of those different, you know, we talk about in receivers, you want the different skill sets, the different, you know, like a basketball team, point guard, power forward, center. He was making it sound like in hockey, we really want to just get as many fast, skilled players on the ice as you possibly can, because it's just a more open game than it used to be.
You know, it's funny because that leads me to another point that I got from watching and studying the Lightning. Draft, develop, and resign your own stars. So the Lightning have been able to do it because they certainly have a homegrown team. When you look at their stars, a lot of their stars were drafted by them, developed by them, and they were able to re-sign them at below market deals. Part of that is because you make them feel very, very comfortable. The other part is they were able to identify some guys who other teams maybe passed on or overlooked because they opted for speed and skill over size. At the time, they elected to zig when everyone else was zagging. when everyone else wanted the enforcers to kind of beat you up and kind of grind it out, they opted for guys that could allow them to play fast. As the NHL opened up the rules and allowed it to become more of a, not a finesse game, but more of an artistic game, they had enough guys that could zip around the ice and do it. And so it is really, to me, about let's go with players over prototypes, meaning I want really good players who are skilled and athletic, who are able to kind of put the puck in the basket, as opposed to these prototypes, which were your bigger, meaner bullies that would kind of muck up the game and kind of make it very, very difficult to score. And so I think they were able to do it. And the final caveat when it came to draft, develop, and re-sign your own stars, I don't think you can underestimate being a first-class organization that puts the players first, meaning give them everything they want so they don't want to go anywhere. So we can talk about Florida and no state tax and all of those other things. Part of the reason they've been able to secure these players is they can say, why would you want to go anywhere else? We have everything that you want right here. So why not just stay here and do it? So they've been very, very creative in how they've been able to keep their own guys.
Yeah, I was thinking about it from a football standpoint. If we're talking about speed and skill, and you think about some of the offensive explosions we've seen since 2000, and you look at the Rams, greatest show on turf, that was a lot of speed and a lot of skill and how they operated. You think about more recently, obviously currently with Kansas City and Baltimore, Kansas City with the speed on the perimeter, Baltimore with the speed at quarterback and how that changes things with his speed and unique skill set. And then I started thinking about, well, what about the dynasties that we've had though? If you really look and go 90s, 49ers was probably more speed and skill the way they were, you know, constructed. I know everybody say, oh, Jerry Rice didn't run that fast. Well, he played ridiculously fast. And then you look at the Cowboys, which was a more, you know, ground and pound, you know, more of a physical approach. The New England Patriots, their long dynasty, I would say, what would you say? To me, I would lean more toward that was more of a physical football team, defensive oriented than a speed and skill team.
I think that is certainly true. And I think the conversation we're touching on too is my final point. Build a team that is tougher to play, meaning they can switch styles whenever the styles are needed. When you think about the New England Patriots, I think that's a great point because when we see the Patriots, we always talk about their snowflake game plans, how each and every week they can change their style. Well, to be able to do that, DJ, you have to have some speed and skill. You have to have some tough guys, some enforcers, and you have to have the nimbleness and the agility as a coaching staff to know when to grind it out, when to open it up. And I think for the Tampa Bay Lightning, they now have that because in recent years, they've made trades to acquire enforcers to beef up their defense because their goal was, hey, we want to be able to play in shootouts or we want to be able to grind it out. However you want to play us, we adapt and we're good at either style. And when you're able to, as we say, not be so one-dimensional in any approach, it gives you a chance to always find yourself to the winner's circle. And so we talk about Baltimore and their speed. Can Baltimore add another element that allows them to play when they say, oh, no, we're not going to let you play the way that you want to play. We're going to make you play this way. But are you good enough to play that way? Because when you can do that, that's when the long-term success and that's when you have the opportunity to have a dynasty like the Patriots had most recently in the last 20 years.
No doubt. I think it's fascinating. It's always good to study championship teams and other sports because I think we can learn something and carry it over to football. All right. We saw this report just came out the other day. N'Keal Harry, first round wide receiver. I think, believe the only first round wideout in the Bill Belichick era there that they've drafted in New England. Hasn't worked out for him. He's been injured a little bit. Lack of production. I know in the statement he complained about the targets, you know, neither here nor there. But to me, first of all, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, going through the process of formally requesting a trade, your thoughts on that, and then we'll get into whether or not N'Keal Harry can be salvaged somewhere else.
I think N'Keal Harry and his agents, his representatives are probably, look, they always tell you in football, don't count the numbers. Don't count the numbers in line. Don't count the number of guys in your position room. Look, you play it out, go to training camp, and do the best that you can do, and ultimately you can win a job. I think what he's doing, he's thinking they brought over Kendrick Bourne and paid him some money. They have Nelson Aguilar and paid him some money. They have Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, even though they aren't, quote unquote, in the same room. He is looking around like, man, I might be left out because Jacoby Myers is still there. They have some other guys that kind of rotate in the mix. where am I going to kind of get in? And so he probably was trying to be proactive. That said, to me, it is a little troubling when he does request a trade only 2 years into his NFL career. You would like to think that the light bulb potentially would come on. So you wonder, has he already quit in his mind on the Patriots when it comes to being able to ever be a player that they thought that he would be as a number one overall pick? I know some would say, well, selfishly, he should look out for himself and try and put himself in the best situation. I get that. But to me, it's a little bit of a defeatist mindset that he's exhibiting. And I just don't know from a toughness standpoint if I want to take on a player who exhibits those qualities, because when it does get tough for him in a new environment, is he going to throw the cards into the middle of the table and say, ah, I can't do it? Or is he going to give me a valiant effort to kind of dig himself and climb himself out of this hole that he finds himself in?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a notoriously tough place for young wide receivers to find success. It's not a simplistic system, and guys struggle to adjust. It's why they've continually gone into the free agent market and brought in veterans into their situation there. It's just tough. It's tough for guys to come up through there and find success. You can find, you can look at the Welkers, the Edelmans, those guys. Actually, it wasn't Welker, wasn't from there. Edelman was from there. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think of other guys that have been developed there outside of Edelman. Who is there?
They haven't. DJ, they haven't drafted a receiver in the first three rounds that has been successful since Deion Branch. Yeah. Deion Branch was an MVP in a Super Bowl, but he was a second-round pick coming out of Louisville who had some success there, but I wouldn't say that Deion Branch was ever a top five receiver, maybe not even a top 10 receiver. I felt like he was a guy that was a player who was really, really successful within that system.
Go back to Troy Brown, man.
I mean, even that, and they inherited Troy Brown because I want to say he was already there when Belichick and those guys got there. And so I think this is a bit of an indictment on their developmental program. Well, not two things. An indictment on their identification and their development program. I don't know if they necessarily ID'd the right receivers for them, because when you think of some of the guys that have failed, Chad Jackson, Aaron Dobson, there have been others that they've taken higher that haven't been successful. And so when you have a series of failures at wide receiver, there's something that you're doing wrong at the organization. Either you don't know exactly what you're looking for in the position, or you don't have the wherewithal to take a young guy and make him better within your system. While some would say, well, look at some of the free agents. Look at Jacoby Myers and those guys. Yeah, but an undrafted free agent doing it, a former quarterback, that's great. But you got to hit on your first three picks in this league. This league is about first, second, and third round picks being able to thrive and succeed. And if you have a long track record of not being able to hit on those picks at wide receiver, there's something wrong with your draft and develop system.
I was curious, going back and looking at my report, I thought, okay, yeah, I don't think I was a huge N'Keal Harry fan. I went back and looked at it. He was my 37th player, so I didn't have him as a first-round guy, but the report actually reads pretty good here. I'll give you the report. Big physical wideout with strong hands and run after the catch talent. Isn't sudden his release, but he powers through press coverage. He's adept at using his big frame to wall off defenders underneath and down the field. He wins a lot of 50-50 balls. He has a special ability to adjust down the field. See the twirling catch versus USC. After the catch, has the strength to break tackles, and he's surprisingly elusive. He has punt return value despite lacking elite top speed. Overall, Harry isn't a burner, but his size and physicality plus his ball skills will make him a fantastic option on third down and inside the red zone. So that's kind of how I thought he would be used and where he could find some success, and just hasn't really happened in a brief sample size.
Yeah, look, it's been a brief sample size, but so much of succeeding in the league is fit within scheme. The majority of players that we evaluate, they need to fall into the right scheme for their skills to really shine and for them to be the players that we project them to be. I think for N'Keal Harry needed to be in a system that was a get the ball to him. Meaning, I never thought he was necessarily a premier route runner, but I thought the best thing that he did was after the catch. And because he wasn't a burner, he needed to be on a system that kept him on the move. Crossing routes, deep overs, things where he didn't slow down. So then he would get the ball in his hands, and then he could be that running back on the perimeter, much like we've seen the Deebo Samuels and Brandon Ayuk's have success in San Francisco. He needed to be in that kind of system. And so until He understands exactly who he is as a player, and until the team, whichever team that is, understands his best way of playing to have success, he is always going to have some stumbling blocks as he tries to find his way into the National Football League.
Yeah, well, see what happens if the Patriots will acquiesce and make the move or not. To be determined, we'll follow that one as we go along here. I want to get to these quarterbacks and some contracts that appear to be on the horizon here. Let's start first with Lamar Jackson, because I think this is the most fascinating one. It doesn't, again, no agent for Lamar, right? So that makes it doubly interesting. But here's my thoughts on it, and then I want to get your take on it, Buck. To me, when you look at the way you kind of structure these things, you always want to be able to announce a win, right? So if you're the player, after the contract's announced, you want to say, I got the most guaranteed money. I got the highest average per year. Whatever hill you want to land on to be able to, you know, wave the flag of your contract. To me, if I'm the Ravens, I'm willing to go high, like very high on the average per year. But I want this basically to be a three-year contract. It's a three-year deal with a ton of money in, jammed into those 3 years. But after 3 years, if things go well, Lamar, you get another bite at the apple. You can come back in and we do another deal, and you're going to, you know, just continue to get market prices. But if somehow your body were to break down with the way that you play, it hasn't thus far. But that would be in the back of my mind if I'm the Ravens, saying, okay, I we love him, we believe in him, but do I want to lock myself in here for 6 years? I don't necessarily want to do that. I'd be more comfortable giving him more money in an average per year, but making it so, however you want to shape it, but so that at the end of 3 years, we can kind of reset and figure out what we want to go from there.
Yeah, no, I think this is a tricky evaluation. I think it's a tricky evaluation because of playing style. Can't dispute anything that Lamar Jackson has been able to do the first 3 or 4 years in the National Football League. He's a guy who has consistently got the Baltimore Ravens into the playoffs. He's helped them win a division title. He's played at an MVP level. He's one of the most dynamic and electric stars that we have at the position. I think the key will be, and this doesn't necessarily fall on him, the pressure to me is on Greg Roman, because once we sign him and re-sign him, I need to understand what is the plan for him to develop where we can max him out with not necessarily exposing him to the hits that maybe he's been exposed to very, very early. So as he slows down, how can we still take advantage of the unique skill set that he presents? I think what I'm hearing from Baltimore in the offseason bodes well for Lamar Jackson to be a longtime starter in Baltimore. More under center play. More under center play means that you now can have more old school play action stuff where he takes it under center, he turns it back to the defense, puts the ball in the belly of the running back, pulls it out, and he is always the threat to come out the back door on bootlegs. We have seen that system, like look at Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, I mean, to another extent, even Aaron Rodgers, who has not the same athleticism than Lamar Jackson, but comparable. We've seen that play action bootleg thing really make it easy for the quarterback. Well, doing that, I now would have more confidence that Lamar can be the long-term starter as he ages out or ages gracefully in that system. So I like your premise in terms of, hey, pay him. Like, even if you have to fully guarantee it, like if you can fully guarantee $120 million on a three-year note where he's at $40 million a year,
damn,
cool. Man. But the onus is not on him, it's on Greg Roman and that offensive staff to let's continue to evolve this offense. So it's not so much him always in the shotgun doing zone read, it's him doing some more traditional tactics that also utilizes athleticism to allow him to play and take some of the off of him to make some of those decisions with the ball in his hands.
Where you stand on Josh Allen with his extension?
Look, I think Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are in similar boats. Like whatever Lamar Jackson gets, I think Josh Allen is going to be in that same vein. And whoever goes to the table first, the next guy is going to come and get $1 more per year on average than him. I think the thing with Josh Allen hasn't been as consistent as Lamar Jackson over his three-year run as a starting quarterback, but his highs have been comparable to the highs that Lamar Jackson has experienced. What I would want to see from Josh Allen is, can I get the consistent play? Because if you look, it was a huge jump from year two to year three. How much of that was him? How much of that was Brian Daboll really being in his bag as the offensive coordinator. He is going to get his money, but I also want to continue to challenge the offensive staff. Can we put Josh Allen in a position where he can consistently play at the level that we saw him play at last year in 2020?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, do you want another year to look at? And man, if he plays like he did this last year, oh, that number is going to go way up.
That's the thing for both of those guys, right? For both of them, is as the team, you want to get this done, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to wait because you know that it's only going to go up. I don't think that we can project any of those guys to kind of take a step back. The tricky evaluation is those guys are going to get their money. What do the Cleveland Browns do with Baker Mayfield? Yeah. That's the one, because Baker Mayfield hasn't performed on an individual basis to be in the same conversation as Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. But here the Browns are looking like a Super Bowl team. So the trick will be, if you're Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, separating Baker Mayfield's contributions to the team's success from what he is as a player. And it's the classic debate. Those two other guys, Allen and Jackson, they're trucks. I think we can confidently stand on the table and say, hey, man, these guys are trucks. They're pulling the team individually. Whatever their style is, the team wins because of the way that they play. In Cleveland, we can't have the same conversation because we're saying, hey, man, they have everything. Look at the talent that they have around Baker Mayfield. He's just a cog in the wheel. He's not the entire wheel. How do we compensate him for what he does as a winner when he's not the driving force of what we do offensively?
Yeah, it's interesting with Baker. I think the thing that works in his favor, if you were his agent, then the thing that you're going to, that I would wear into the negotiating room, I would wear that Browns jersey that had the names of the 20 something quarterbacks that they cycled through. And to me, I think that is interesting. Like, if you're Kevin Stefanski, you haven't been there through all those years, and maybe you could say, hey, I really like Baker, but there's no need for us to overpay. We can, if it doesn't work with him, I can find somebody else, and then we can, off we go. But if you're the Haslams, and they weren't there through the entirety of that jersey of all those quarterbacks, but around enough, and he was in Pittsburgh previously as part of their ownership group, so he saw just one after another the failure at the quarterback position. And I could just sit there and see him say, look, he might not be Tom Cruise. He's more of a B-level actor, but I've seen so many bad movies that I'm willing to pay my B-level actor, A-level actor money just because I know what he is. It's the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. And I know we can win with this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to that, but then I wonder, okay, because when you do it, particularly at quarterback prices, you're talking about a hefty investment. And so if you overpay for Baker Mayfield and he underperforms based on what you think, it upsets your apple cart in the locker room. And so how do you handle that thing? I believe Baker Mayfield's situation is very, very similar to what we saw from the San Francisco 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, you like him, but maybe you don't love him. And so if you're the Cleveland Browns, you have to figure out what's the dollar amount for like versus what's the dollar amount for love. And depending on how savvy they are as they look ahead to quarterback classes that are coming, is there a player that we think that we potentially can get where we might be picking, or are we shrewd enough to maneuver to get a young quarterback to be able to, this guy can give us what we want without having to pay inflated prices for Baker Mayfield.
I mean, I just look at that roster though, and I just go, I don't see how they're not a double digit win team for the next several years, which is going to take them out of a premier quarterback.
Right.
Market.
But it will take them out. But then we've also seen teams trade up and do whatever they have to do to get in a position to do that. Yeah. Now, I don't know how Andrew Berry and those guys, when they studied the draft and using analytics and those things to determine value of their picks. But I do wonder how they look at Baker Mayfield and how they look at this team with him going forward, if he's getting what we call that elite money that he could get. Yeah. Because if they win this year, man, his owner now has all the leverage to come back and really push for a big-time deal. I wonder. DJ, I wonder, because this is a perfect test case, because they still have the fifth-year option that they can make him play on. They also still have a couple of franchise tags. if they want to, they could push this out similar to Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
It might be a balloon payment, but they could push it out and really make him see and really determine if he really is the guy that they think he could be at the position.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating one to watch. Of those three contracts, I think you nailed it. I think that's the most interesting one. Some position battles in the AFC here we can hit on quickly. Quarterback battles. New England Patriots. Who do you think emerges there with Cam and Mac?
I think Cam opens the season as the starter. And then I think it's on him to determine whether he keeps the job. I just believe Belichick feels a little indebted to give Cam a fair shake at it with a team that is better than the squad that he had last year. But I would say this, if Cam falters at all, I think Mac Jones is going to be there to kind of take the job. What you hear from Mac Jones is how he's absorbed and picked up the playbook, which we would expect. I think the bigger thing that I want to see is how does Mac Jones look in preseason games? How does it all look when he doesn't have all the luxuries and comforts of the things that he had around him at Alabama? But I think this is going to be a close one. I think if Cam leaves the door cracked, Mac Jones kind of busts through the door the middle of the season.
I'd be curious to see how they can finesse it with Cam. If Mac Jones does emerge as the starter, you know, in an early portion of the season, can they keep Cam on board enough where they could use him in short yardage and down in the red zone? Because to me, he's still a tremendous value. He's the best inside the five quarterback, I think, in NFL history because of what he can do. You can't get him on the ground.
I mean, as bad as we make out a season, last year he scored 12 touchdowns on the ground.
No.
I mean, he certainly added a dimension to their offense as a runner. And to be honest, we really don't know what Cam is because there's pre-COVID Cam and then there's post-COVID Cam. Pre-COVID, he looked like he was rolling. Post-COVID, he didn't look very, very good, particularly as a passer. So we'll see. But I think the New England Patriots have really finessed it where they have $10 million committed to quarterbacks, DJ.
It's amazing.
Like, I mean, it is the best deal going. Like, from a cost efficiency standpoint, I don't know if you can find a better quarterback room than they have in terms of the amount of money that they've committed to the quarterback. We'll see if those quarterbacks can play, though.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. All right, Denver, Drew Lock, Teddy Bridgewater.
I think management would love to see Drew Lock win it. I think Vic Fangio would like to see Teddy Bridgewater win it because Teddy Bridgewater is going to take it over. And remember, he's a defensive guy. And the first thing that defensive coaches think about is, let's not mess this up. With turnovers being the number one determining factor and whether you win or lose, they want someone who's going to take care of the ball. And so if Teddy Bridgewater doesn't have epic moments in the preseason where he's turning it over like crazy, I think he emerges as a starter.
So this is where I'll disagree with you because I think it might be universal that they'll be rooting for Teddy because George Payton didn't draft Drew Lock. He signed Teddy Bridgewater, so it's almost a feather in his cap if Teddy emerges as that guy. We always talk about the formula, right? Every team's got to find their winning formula and how it works. And when you look at this Denver Broncos defense and how good they could potentially be, the formula for them is going to be don't turn the football over. And that, to me, points more towards Teddy than it does towards Drew. It limits the upside, limits the excitement. But I'm guessing that when we finish the season that Teddy will have started more games than Drew Lock in the upcoming season. That's my guess.
I mean, I'm with that. Semantics. We're saying similar things. You brought up George Payton in this connection with Teddy Bridgewater in Minnesota. It does make sense. Naturally, you would like to think about having a younger quarterback in place that you can build around. Teddy's young enough that you still can build around him if you deem him to be that guy. Or he's a nice bridge to whenever you can find that quarterback that can help your team go to the next level.
Last one here. Houston, let's say if Deshaun Watson, for whatever reasons, is not there, right, and it doesn't show up or is suspended or whatever happens in his situation right now, between Tyrod and Davis Mills, I mean, it's got to be Tyrod, isn't it? I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to roll Davis Mills out there right away.
I can't imagine they would roll Davis Mills out. Because remember, Davis Mills only has 11 career starts at the collegiate level. Despite his skill and talent, he hasn't really played a lot of football. Tyrod Taylor should be the guy. He should win the job. Unless he gets snake bit with another weird thing that allows a young quarterback to surpass him, I think Tyrod Taylor has to be the guy.
Yep. There you go. I'm with you on that one. All right. Anything else you want to throw in here, Buck, before we get out of here?
Nah, DJ, like, we're just getting close. couple weeks away, and we're in training camp and we're doing all the stuff and we're back at it. So it should be fun.
Yeah, I've got some first look posts coming up here. A new one on Treylon Burks, a receiver from Arkansas. He's a good player. So that'll be up. What else are you working on?
Right now, I'm just taking the conversation that we just had on the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm going to put that to print, like what NFL teams can learn from that. We'll talk a little bit about the N'Keal Harry situation, why the Patriots can't develop wide receivers like we talked about. And then I figured out a way to talk about these 2022 quarterbacks, Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell, and some of those other
guys. Nice. I love it. Be on the lookout for that. NFL.com/Bucky Brooks. You can find all Bucky's notebooks right there. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Appreciate you guys hanging with us, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.